Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And you're very welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown. It is December 28th, Thursday, if you are not tracking the days like most people have been over the last week or so. Happy Christmas to anybody who is listening or watching on YouTube. Hope you had a good one and hope the new year treats you well as well. And I would say, like most people listening to this podcast, whether you have a good New Year's Eve is going to depend on the result on Saturday morning between Celtic and Rangers. It's going to be the game that's going to decide whether Celtic have tossed off that 8-point lead that they had and give Rangers a chance to go top of the table in the new year, because they have a couple of games in hand. Alan Morrison, Celtic by Numbers. Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good. I hope everyone is well. Just a bit full and jaded, but we're working it out. Hit the gym this morning, so feeling a little bit better.
And Jico James as well. Have you gained how many stone over the last couple of days?
Stone. What is that, like 14 pounds or
something?
Oh,
shit. I forgot pounds. You just don't use the...
Come here. Come on. You guys with your ancient metrics throwing rocks around for your weight. I don't know. I would say... So I've gone through a seasonal disaster this year where American Thanksgiving I put on... Well, first of all, I went to the Finger Lakes, which is a lake region in New York where a lot of, you know, horrible things like wine and breweries and distilleries all over the place. So it was a week of gluttony. I went up there. And then with American Thanksgiving shortly thereafter, it's been a complete debacle. So yeah, probably about a stone in even fatter than usual from October until now. So we're waiting anxiously to violate my New Year's resolution once again in about a week here.
Mm-hmm. Making all these promises that we're not going to keep in about a week and a half time. So looking forward to that one. But before we look forward to the Celtic Rangers game that's coming up this Saturday, we want to look back to a 3-0 victory over Dundee on Stephen's Day, Boxing Day for you in the UK. This was a 1-0 victory that was really, you know, buffed up by two late Mikey Johnson goals off the bench. But we're going to celebrate the 3-0 victory nonetheless. This game, James, was stodgy, slow, but utterly dominant, really. Like, there can't be anybody who came away from that game thinking it was a bad performance by any measurement from Celtic. They had 38 shots in total, I think. An XG of over 2.10 to, like, 0.3, I think, was the final showing for Dundee. So, like, this was not a situation where Celtic were anyway worried by Dundee. It was just a matter of really not taking the chances. I think on another day, Celtic could have potentially scored 3 in the first half alone. So, as victories going into derbies go, it was one that was fairly injury-free, depending on Cameron Carter-Vickers' form this week, and just a relatively straightforward one. Nothing to worry about, essentially, which is good, in my opinion.
It was like Muhammad Ali's performance against George Foreman in the epic rope-a-dope, only instead of Muhammad Ali, it was me fighting George Foreman and playing the rope-a-dope role. And so the talent level and the ability to execute on it was just not there. But they did rope-a-dope. I mean, that they sat back, and this was evident and is evident in their profile as far as how they've been playing this year. They're actually the deepest lying defensive team in the league, despite their kind of relative ascension, even being a promoted side. So they've you know, been relatively effective playing this way against most of the league and dominating really on set pieces. And I think we did a very good job in kind of combating their aerial bombardments. Actually, I think that was the standout for the game for us, meaning that that's not something that we always are able to handle all that effectively. And they shelled us consistently into our left back area, as many teams are apt to do. And I thought we did a really good job. And yeah, it's difficult with the bombardment of, you know, and I think that's the theme of the game, bombardment. So theirs was high balls to our defensive left side, and we were just bombarding their box with 38 shots because they sat deep. And, you know, that creates a bit of a messy game. It's really tough to create quality chances when a team's bunkered that much and that central. And that's a distinction between what Livingston did and what Dundee did, is that Livingston went that kind of flat six at the back and were very wide in engaging us, whereas Dundee wasn't quite as wide and were giving us that kind of outer wing area and packing centrally, which I actually think is more effective. And I think Livingston's approach was pretty naive and dopey. I'm not sure why you would engage our wingers that far out towards the touchline, but so because it just creates central space opportunities. So yeah, I thought their game plan, and this was my fear going into the game, which was that their game plan could be one of these just really annoying nil-nil type of games if they got a good performance out of their keeper. And fortunately, Carson's pretty awful. And that distribution of awful helped us in this game. And he had two goals he conceded that were pretty, pretty poor. So that even within the context of 38 shots, I mean, if you really look at it, it was Kyogo's chance as the really high quality one, and pretty much wasn't anything else as far as high quality. So that's what it was, a formula where I was worried, but fortunately Carson had a howler, and we basically, I thought, excelled in defending the aerial ball, which made it a much easier game from a defensive perspective than I was worried about.
Yeah, it definitely seems that Celtic have worked on set pieces over the last couple of weeks since Brendan Rodgers actually mourned the quality of our attacking and defensive quality from that sort of play in the game from set pieces, defending them and attacking them. In terms of the chances, Alan, I would say, like, in the first half alone, in my head, on another day, Kyogo takes the one where he's played through by Matt O'Reilly very early on. He just misses narrowly. There's a header from Palma at the back post, which you would say, you know, a better player potentially, you would, without wanting to go back there, you would say Jota probably would have scored the header at the back post there. And then there was the Liam Scales header from the corner that went narrowly wide. Like, on a different day, all three of those hit the back of the net, and it looks like a much more comfortable game from a Celtic perspective, where you're 3-0 up at halftime, you sort of cruise to the end. But in terms of the domination from Celtic, was there anything that stood out to you as something that was really positive, firstly?
Well, I think it became clearer. We've talked about, you know, Celtic's attacking cohesion or perhaps lack of, and wondering what it is that they're actually trying to do. And I think, because of the way Dundee set up, it was actually very obvious, not only because Celtic had so much of the ball and did so much attacking. The attacking plan, if you like, when I put it that way, kind of became more obvious, really. And as James said, they were happy to let the wingers have the ball one-on-one, which I think is what Rodgers has been trying to do all season. And then it's really up to the winger to conjure up some magic and then, you know, get something into the box. And that's quite different to the last couple of seasons, where it was more about getting the eight, the fullback and the winger to gang up on the wide midfielder and the defender and create overloads and triangles and angles and options. It's almost a little bit more kind of old school football in that, you know, a lot of diagonals to get the winger on the ball early, one on one. Again, listen, it looks like in general there is a good news story in that, you know, Celtic are actually increasing their XG per game. They're creating more chances. In fact, the XG differential is trending upwards. I mean, it dipped badly at the end of last season, and now it's towards sort of, you know, less than 1.5 differential, and now it's trending nearer 2 again, which is great news. But you know, as James has pointed out previously, the key metric to sort of temper that really is the XG per shot. So it's the average shot quality is worryingly low. And why is it low? Well, I think we're relying on when the wingers do get the ball wide, they kind of thrash it across the box in general. Now, we know that Maeda, it's really the ball could end up anywhere when he attempts a cross. And Palmer, is if he gets past the player, is going to be, if he's on his left foot, it's really just a hit and hope into the box. If he's on his right foot, it's going to be almost a cross come shot. And, you know, as with the goal for Kyogo, it can be pretty effective, but it's a bit of a mixed bag. Last season, it was more about using those three players to create overloads to get into a position where one of those three would be in the box deep and be able to cut balls back low and hard. And then, you know, we saw the classic Kyogo goal or the classic Abada or Jota tapping at the back post kind of thing. And we're not seeing as much of that. We're seeing a lot more headers. And we're seeing a lot more trying to hit Kyogo early, hit Maeda early. Because obviously, if you get the ball to Maeda out wide and he's not facing the goal, he's going to pass it straight back every single time, right? And even if you do give him the ball out wide, and the defender's within 2 yards of him, he's going to do nothing with it. So unless you don't get the ball to him in space to run at, and he doesn't have to change direction or do anything fancy like that, therefore control the ball in any way, it's pretty much redundant as a winger, I would argue. So We're relying on our wingers to be one-on-one. One of them simply isn't a player that can play that way, and the other one is quite slow, and when he gets it on his left foot, it's pretty much a thrash into the box. That means then that when we do get the ball in the box, we're generating lower quality crosses. And then the other thing is we're generally getting one less player in the box. I'm oversimplifying massively here, but last season there was a big onus. Essentially, when Celtic had the ball, it was a 2-3-5, was really the kind of shape, with five players attacking, the 2-8s, the wide players, and get as many of them into the box, depending on where the ball was. If the ball's not on your side, you're attacking part of the box. And when we generally try to get five players in the box, sometimes more. The number of touches in the box has gone down this season. It's only been about 3. Matt O'Reilly's touches in the box has gone up astronomically, and it looks like the onus is on him to be the player that breaks into the box all the time. And the second midfielder, whether it's Bernardo, Holm, whoever, just isn't doing that as much. So it's a combination of many things here. It's never one thing. But the net result of all that is A, that I don't think we're utilising our resources correctly. B, we're not being as clinical and as careful in the final third. C, we're not getting as many players in the box. And all of that is adding up to a lower chance quality, a lot more headers, we're trying a lot more earlier passes, which are difficult, and not many of them are coming off because they're so hard. You know, and this is kind of against the myth that under Rodgers we're desperately slow in build-up. Sometimes we're really quick in build-up because we bang it early. So and that's kind of mixed in terms of whether it comes off or not. So take all these things together. You know, there is definitely green shoots there of the overall trends are improving, but I'm still concerned that A, that our tactical setup with the wide players isn't right, and B, that I would like to see us go back to being a bit more clinical in the final third, a bit more careful in how we build up and really measure balls into the box to really get the best out of Kyogo.
Yeah, I do wonder one thing about the wing play is why Palmer always starts on the left-hand side, because the way that Celtic are playing with their wingers, it would make more sense for Palma to be on the right-hand side because he is so right foot dominant. And what you're seeing a lot on the left-hand side is him cutting in and trying to have a shot, or like you say, the cross come shot, and hoping that somebody gets a foot on it to make it deflect in the opposite direction. And it just seems really ineffective. And I do think he would be more effective on the right wing, but that potentially could be down to the fact that Rodgers is looking to get his fullbacks further forward and on the overlap now. Certainly seeing that with Greg Taylor, seeing it a little bit more with Alistair Johnson now as well. But yeah, there does seem to be just that missing link in the front. And James, when we do get the ball into good positions, there is that just lack of quality. I'm not going to use that word again. I would say more, just being clinical with the chances. Maybe it's down to confidence. Maybe it's down to game plan. I'm not sure. But in terms of the quality of chances we're creating, is it, in your opinion, that maybe it's just we're creating less quality chances in terms of like the XG numbers?
I think that the distribution of the chances is of low quality as well, meaning that we're getting a decent amount of really, really high quality, like we saw against Dundee with, and again, for people listening and watching, I think the XG on that Kyogo opportunity was something like 0.75, something like that. So, you know, in the neighborhood of a penalty shot. So that's an extremely high XG opportunity. And we are getting some of those, a decent number of those, but a lot of the chances we're getting are kind of in the, you know, 5% to 10% range. And the weekend was very much in that regard. I mean, we had a ton of like 6, 7, 8, 9 type of XG opportunities, which again, those tend to be ones, for example, and this is where StatsBomb is a bit of a differentiator, where you have the model accounts for where defenders are positioned and where the keeper is positioned. So you're going to be able to ascertain the quality of the shot relative to, you know, if there's two or three defenders lined up, which again, in a game like against Dundee, where they were so centrally packed, that's a huge difference if there's two or three defenders in the line of sight for the shot. So, because obviously you get deflections, you get blocks, that type of thing. So I think, you know, the average quality, even the distribution of it's not great. And for all the reasons that Alan talked about, I think there's a material aspect of this as far as quality of players, given the injuries and the composition of the team versus the required or intended style of play. You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about the striker position, and you know, Kyogo's just not getting, as Alan said, the type of finishes that he has thrived on, those kind of low cutbacks. So he's being left to try and create and have some of these through balls when they do work, which just by definition, they're not going to work that often because it's a really hard thing to play those kind of direct vertical passes over the top to beat a defense. The timing has to be right for offsides and the touch, the control, the spacing, all of that stuff. I mean, it's a difficult thing to pull off. So if you think about that from a stat nerd perspective, the probability of that can be quite lumpy. You know, just our luck, we'll get like three of them in one game when we win 7-0 and then not see it again for, you know, a week or two or a month or two. And that's, you know, the issue about these averages versus kind of the sequencing and the distribution. So that's the other thing that's concerning me is the distribution of quality, even above and beyond the average quality. Because if you look at the average quality, we've basically reverted. That's what made Ange Ball so weaponized domestically, is that, you know, we've basically come back to what our kind of typical average chance quality has been in past seasons, where that's 19-20, which again, we had overwhelming talent. I mean, it was a really talented team. Even the 18-19 team, you know, the last time Rodgers was here, we're basically right back in line with those. So we've come back from the Ange Ball peak, but again, it's the distribution that has me as concerned as anything else.
Mm. Let's talk about the lineup then, because there was a few interesting parts to it in relation to the game coming up this weekend. So that's sort of where we'll shift over to what's coming up this weekend. We saw Cameron Carter-Vickers taken off for an injury. Now, Brendan Rodgers has said that he has a tight hamstring. He didn't say that it was pulled. He just said, we'll see how it goes this week. We'll probably have an update on that tomorrow or today, depending on when his press conference is before the Rangers game. There was Paulo Bernardo, who's now good enough to play in the SPFL, having starred in the Champions League. And Dyson Maida came in at right wing as well. So we're looking at a couple of changes. We have an update on Hatate, who is back training with the team, and Lee Labada, who is back training as well, who Brendan Rodgers said is doing really well in training as well. So we've got some interesting things to look at in terms of the starting lineup. One thing that should be noted is that Stephen Welsh came on for Cameron Carter-Vickers, and that neither Lagerbielke nor Navroski were anywhere near the team. So it seems that Stephen Welsh is now the third choice centre back after Cameron Carter-Vickers and Liam Scales, which I don't think anybody would have predicted, having Celtic signed two centre backs for 3 and 4 million between them. So we'll start with the centre back option, Alan. We've spoken about Stephen Welsh before. He actually, it would be sort of apt if Stephen Welsh did come into this game if Cameron Carter-Vickers wasn't fit for it, given that he was tossed into a Rangers game in one of his, I think it might have been his first game or second game for Celtic at the time, did really well, or did as well as you would hope a young player would in those circumstances. So if Cameron Carter-Vickers isn't fully fit, do you put a, say, 70% Cameron Carter-Vickers on the pitch to begin with Liam Scales, or do you go with a fully fit Stephen Welsh?
So we're back to this issue of injury management again. So, you know, apparently of all the injuries that we had in the summer, and, you know, Hatate, Abada, there's a few more, I think. It was quite long-term ones. The Carter-Vickers one was apparently the worst. So in terms of, you know, the grade of hamstring tear. And, you know, it looks to me, and again, I've not really dug into the data to be fair, but it looks to me like he's kind of a little bit hampered. He's not quite at full speed. Again, I'm just saying that as an opinion. As I said, I don't have the data to back that up. I thought he was actually been superb the last two games, absolutely brilliant, back to sort of near his kind of best. But clearly, you know, this isn't the second time now that this, I think he's had to be taken off, is it? This is still being managed, as they say. So managed means that you're taking risks with the player. You know, the old pros will often tell you no player is ever 100% fit. That may well be true. But, you know, you want them to at least be sort of 90 plus, perhaps. And, you know, if he's less than that, then, you know, the size of the risk increases. And with that severity of injury, you are kind of playing with people's careers a little bit in that sense. So it's a worry. It would be a big blow, obviously, if he didn't play, because he is so important to Celtic. He is the best defender. He's a very calm. And his level of performance, as I say, doesn't really waver depending on which of the cavalcade of other centre-backs is kind of next to him. So, yeah, it would be massive. But on the other hand, we're back to, you know, we shouldn't be taking chances with this guy's career. If he's going to break down in a game with a hamstring strain, that's on the club. You know, I mean, the player will always say that he wants to play. That's not the issue. He's not a medical expert. That decision should be taken out of his hands almost. So, yeah, from a performance perspective, obviously it's much better if he does play. But again, I would hate to think that we're taking chances with him, really, in terms of his long-term fitness.
In terms of what it does to the team, James, we've spoken about Stephen Welsh before in depth. So what we're losing from Cameron Carter-Vickers is clearly a dominant centre-back in every sort of aspect of the play. What we're gaining from Stephen Welsh is distribution. You would say he's a very good distributor of the ball, but we're losing some real high quality in terms of the aerial battle. Is that something that matters against Rangers, having looked at the way that they play and what they would try to exploit from Stephen Welsh? Is that something that would worry you, that we would be losing that aerial, or would what we're gaining in distribution be sort of a, how do you weigh those two up?
I think that the in this matchup, so this is the issue with all of our center back mixes, is you're kind of choosing which deficiencies to embrace or to tolerate, I guess. And specifically against Rangers, I think it is problematic relative to set pieces in particular. As we showed on the weekend, I think we're okay in, you know, defending those, because we're so used to it, defending these kind of high balls, and Rangers are not, and even under Clement, I mean, I think he's changed how they play a little bit, but they're not above going direct. I mean, they still, particularly with Goldson and even you know, Suter, if he plays. I think Goldson came out injured last weekend as well. So I don't know. I haven't kept tracks or tabs on what his availability is going to be, or whether there's still a question on his fitness. But even Suter, you know, is pretty good at playing those kind of long high balls. So I'm more worried about that relative to set pieces. I think the other issue, and this is probably more problematic, is, and Alan and I have spoken, I think, pretty frequently over the last few years about Welsh profiling as kind of a right center back in a back three. Because of that distribution, his ability to carry the ball, he's relatively quick for a center back. But the challenge is that he's not the greatest in kind of 1v1 defending face up. So as a dribbler coming at him, the data is pretty, you know, not great, let's put it that way. And that's where I worry more so from a Rangers perspective, whether it's Cantwell coming from the midfield or Sima cutting in. And Sima's dreadful on the ball, by the way, but you know, if he's able to get it past somebody like Welsh, for example, he's going to blow by him. Matanda's the same way. I mean, he's absolutely dreadful on the ball, but extremely fast. Speed that we just don't simply have on our team in general, let alone at the center back position. So if they're able to get into those channels and get beyond basically the ball, and that's the issue, is that you're going to have gaps of space with Hart because of his athleticism issues and quickness issues. And then, you know, if the ball gets into anywhere in that space behind our center backs, these guys can run on and probably beat us for pace. And then, you know, it's an issue. So that it's that 1v1 dribbling at Welsh that I'm more concerned about. And I think, you know, this is the challenge, as Alan said, there's the stacking of risks of playing Carter Vickers, if there's whatever the probability is of him having a longer term revisiting of a hamstring issue. I mean, if he's out for 2 months again or something like that, I mean, given the Asian Cup and players missing and integrating new players, I mean, that again would be stacking risks on top of each one another heading into January and February. But the other risk is, you know, in fairness to Carter Vickers, playing with a hamstring injury of whatever grade, his lateral quickness is going to be stressed as well. I mean, that's literally the thing that's going to give out or be problematic with hamstring or muscle injury is that kind of fast twitch, you know, explosion. So, you know, healthy Carter Vickers is going to be materially better in that regard, I would argue, than Welsh. But, you know, injured Carter Vickers, that could be an issue. So those are the kind of those are the big challenges I see coming into this game, because it really is a 1v1 athleticism issue, because Rangers are not, and we'll probably get into this more when we talk about data profiles, but they are not a creative team. They are not a team that's going to, you know, play intricate 4, 5, 6 passes and carve you open through the midfield. I mean, it can happen, obviously, but on a tendency basis, that's, you know, that's not a risk that I think is material. It's more so they're just, you know, kind of big and fast and athletic and can win some of those 1v1 battles. So that's, you know, my concern heading into the game.
Yeah, it sounds like we're almost back to like the mid-2000s because of what I'm about to say. But the way that if I was in charge of...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Rangers, what I would do is I would get Dessers and say stick to Liam Scales and sort of try bully him a little bit and exploit the left-hand flank of Celtic's defense with Greg Taylor getting forward and not having the athleticism to get back, Tavernier busting down that right wing, getting runners from the midfield. And that's sort of, worryingly enough, that's sort of the way that they play. And on that, Alan, I mentioned Paulo Bernardo. One thing that you took from his Champions League data was how good he is off the ball. That's sort of where he was thriving, at least against better opposition. Is that the role that you would see him playing this weekend, then? Is he something that Celtic can actually use to their advantage, that yes, there might be a little bit of exploitation down the left-hand side of Celtic's defence, but Bernardo will be there to patch up some of the holes left in the midfield to stop Cantwell busting forward or anyone else getting through the midfield so easily for Celtic?
Yeah, I mean, they've been playing pretty much two holding midfield players in every game, which partly explains their excellent defensive record. I mean, playing two holding midfielders players against the quality of the rest of the SPFL is a little bit overkill in my view, but you're probably not going to concede many goals, to be fair. And as James says, for them, it's more about getting the ball wide and as early as possible, really, banging in crosses and from quite deep positions sometimes, because again, Sima, as well as being very quick, is a big guy, right? So, you know, having him challenging for headers at the back post and or challenging for headers at the edge of the box is not a bad thing. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, Celtic generally will have more control. I mean, they have average of over 100 passes more than Rangers per game. So actually what I've noticed in the last few games is I think the fullbacks are inverting to a massive degree. You know, the last few games we've seen Johnson pick up the ball almost from Taylor in the inside left position and vice versa. Taylor has been playing sometimes as a third or fourth midfielder. So I think we'll look to dominate that midfield. I think we will dominate that midfield, depending on who they play in there. I mean, Lundstrom's a good defensive player. He's not creative and he's not particularly mobile. So I think we'll look to try and exploit that. Bernardo has got good athleticism. He's good at getting around the pitch, like you say. His pressing, counter-pressing is very good. It's almost at sort of Matt O'Reilly and then Maeda sort of levels. He's kind of third, I would say, in the group. So I think that'll be important, because you probably don't want, as you say, Goldson and Sauter to be playing, you know, long 50-yard raking passes to the flanks, which they're very good at. And you know, I think then we've got a conundrum in terms of, do you actually switch the wingers, as you talked about earlier? Because Maeda has, you know, generally does a good job on Tavernier to stop him advancing. He's their most creative player. let's be honest about it. He's easily their most creative player. And then, you know, let Palma deal with whoever it is. I don't know if Barisic is injured, as Yilmaz's been playing, but you'd imagine that, you know, you'd fancy that. I'd fancy that matchup, to be honest with you. And I think Maeda's more comfortable on the left. He's often played in that kind of, you know, left into out sort of second, almost like a second striker than a winger. So I don't think we'll do that, because I think we would have done it by now if we were going to do that. But to me, that would be optimal to swap them round. I would definitely play Bernardo in this game. I think he's, the only thing about him is just he has less pack passes than Joe Hart. Like, he averages just over one a game. Him, you know, the three players with the lowest pack passing scores are Joe Hart, who's the goalkeeper, Kyogo, who might complete three passes a game, of which one might be a pack pass, and then Bernardo. It's almost deliberate. It almost looks like he just refuses to pass the ball forward. It's really weird. I don't understand it. As somebody who clearly, from his data, playing for Portuguese age group, international level football, gets a bundle of goals and assists, he doesn't pass the ball forward. It's just the most bizarre thing. And maybe if he gets a run in the team, that we'll see that confidence and we'll see that kind of start to develop. But that's the one aspect that we're just not seeing. And again, it's another reason, I think, why we're a little bit down on chance quality, is that we haven't had that second midfielder beside O'Reilly that's giving that creative boost to the side. But for his off the ball, I think he's definitely worth it. I mean, my overall feeling on this game is that I think if they get a point out of this, they'll then gamble that they can win the two games in hand and then be a point ahead, and then next they're playing Celtic at Ibrox. So I think they'll be pretty conservative. So I think Celtic will have a lot of the ball.
Okay. Well, let's dive into some of the data between the two sides, because, I mean, I've seen a little bit of them in Europe and a few of their games that were on Sky, but I can't admit that I haven't seen much of them at all this season. I've actually seen more games that they've lost because I've saw that they were losing and switched it on for a bit of a laugh. But in terms of how the two teams play and how the quality of the two teams, James, let's park Mickey Beale and just concentrate on the Clermont, because as we know now, Mickey Beale is flying with Sunderland after his first game in charge. So we'll talk about Clermont and Rangers since then. So one thing that most people have been following, I think, that's been interesting is the expected points table that Rangers report have been doing on Twitter, and it's actually fluctuated the odd time. It's gone from, you know, Rangers being ahead and then Celtic being ahead and everyone losing their minds over the fact that they just can't wrap their head around the whole expected points idea. But the updated one is that Rangers are ahead on the expected points table with 89.16 points to Celtic's 87 points. So that doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen, okay? But that is what the data is seeing that is the most likely outcome based upon the team's two form in the last couple of games. That's essentially all it's saying, that based on the form of the last couple of games, this is the expected points that the two teams are expected to get. So Rangers lead at the minute, having Celtic been in the lead just about 2.5 weeks ago. So how much credence do you give the expected points table, and how much does that line up with the data that you've been looking at?
For me, it's like anything else. And Alan and I talk about this all the time. It's a tool to be used, and it can be part of a more robust analytical process. It's not something that I think is, I'm always skeptical of what they call ex post, which is, you know, data mining the past to use that to project the future. I'm always kind of skeptical of that in a linear sense, meaning that it can work for a period of time and then it falls apart horribly, that kind of thing. And that's kind of my experience, and I think history suggests, particularly when you're talking about things that are this complicated. So I think what it's reflecting, and I don't know the guy's model. I kind of can intuit some of it, but I think what his model is likely picking up on is the amount that Celtic have been conceding. I mean, that if you have two teams that have the same XG differential, if one of them is conceding higher amounts, even though the differential is the same, the way that's going to probabilistically work out, if you run, you know, like Monte Carlo simulations and all these kind of regression analysis that tend to be the foundation of these kind of models, is you're going to end up with a higher probability for the team that's conceding fewer chances. It's just going to skew things because of the way the math works. And so I that's likely what the model is picking up. I think the interesting part about all of this is, as Alan was saying, kind of directionally, whether or not there's material improvement for Celtic, whether or not there's going to be material improvement relative to players returning and coming back to fitness. I think the problem with that hope and the expectation is Rangers. I mean, again, a lot of Celtic fans may not be aware of it, but in just kind of tracking them, they've had probably a bigger injury crisis than Celtic have in the past, you know, 6 weeks. I mean, they're playing Sterling in midfield, and I would guess he's probably going to start in midfield on Saturday. And, you know, big, athletic, fast, quick guy. But he's a defender. He's not a midfielder. He hasn't played midfield at the senior level prior to this. So
yeah, he played left back against Celtic in the first game.
And I think they kind of signed him as a right back slash almost like a right center back. I mean, he's a fairly robust person. You know, he's not like Ridvan, a little person, or Greg Taylor and Ridvan are kind of the same in stature, whereas Sterling's more along the, you know, kind of bassy, even Barisic size, you know, decent sized guy. So, you know, Cifuentes is probably out, Jack's out. You know, you go down the list, I mean, their midfield's been decimated, their forwards have been decimated. So I think, you know, statistically speaking, there's a lot of trends here, a lot of volatility around how this all might shake out in the coming months. Throw in a January transfer window and what both teams might do. So I take these kind of models. I think, again, they're an instrument of gauging where things are, understanding how the model is likely constructed. It's not something that I'm all that worked up about. What I think is more problematic is that since Clement came in, we're basically, and the model would suggest this, that what's been showing, it's basically a coin flip. Like we're legit in coin flip territory. And I think that alone is an indictment on where Celtic are at. I mean, I think if most things go right here, we're probably still in a coin flip situation for the league. And to me, that's, you know, a failure of football operations. And so that's even if we recruit a couple of starting level players. And because again, I think you're going to just have randomness that goes in there. I think they've got, over the duration of the rest of the league, I think they have a material advantage at the keeper position. And I suspect that's not going to be addressed by Celtic. And that's a big deal. I mean, when you're talking about dropping points in some of these, you know, horrible winter away fixtures as you get into January and February, you know, the possibilities of 0-0 or 1-1 type of draws and dropping points, I think that just because of the disparity in keeper play, I think that, you know, skews in their favor. So, yeah, I think that's the big thing for me, is that we've almost surrendered control of the league campaign. I mean, that we can do most things right now and still lose the league. And that's not only problematic. I mean, it's a little scary. That's when you lose your own determination to a degree, that becomes a bit alarming.
Yeah, I think there's two parts to that. It's almost the fact that Celtic were at a position of strength having won a treble, and then a further position of strength having gone 8 points ahead, and now all of a sudden it's sort of 50-50 chance whether or not they're going to win this league or not. And Alan, you pointed out at the start of the season how important this league campaign is because of the Champions League money that comes with it. And it is vitally important that Celtic do win this league and win the title. But in terms of this game coming up this weekend, I mean, we mentioned the expected points situation. Those who are frequent listeners or watchers to our show will understand the jargon that we're talking here about XG and the XG differential. But just a slight explainer of what we're talking about here is that each shot has a quality that's measured by XG. And then the XG differential is how much XG do you create versus how much do you concede. So what is Celtic's XG differential standing at the minute?
It kind of dipped below 1.5 at the beginning of the season, which is getting into territory where, you know, luck and other factors can play an overwhelming influence. Whereas if you get it to sort of 1.75 to 2 and 2 and above, which is kind of where it's trending now, you've almost removed some of the risk in terms of, you know, keeper having an amazing number of saves and so on and so forth. So I think both clubs actually are underperforming their XG. We talked about why that is with Celtic. I think it's to do with we're not optimally set up to create the best quality chances. We've got an elite finisher in Kyogo, but we're not giving him the tools to finish the chances that he normally thrives on and has done for the last 2 years. Whereas over at Ibrox, I think, you know, their recruitment, especially in the forward areas, was just very poor, and they recruited poor players, frankly. You know, the likes of Dessers, Lammers. I mean, Sima's been a success, but his kind of expected scoring contribution, that's XG plus expected assists, isn't particularly high for a player in a dominant side that plays in the position he does. And as James says, it's pretty random what happens when he gets the ball. But, you know, like in kids' football, and the SPFL can sometimes be like kids' football, size and pace counts for a lot, right? So he kind of gets away with that a little bit. Where they have been kind of impressive is, as James says, is in reducing the other team's XG, and I think that's a lot. Well, some of it's to do with the fact that you're never going to give away a penalty. That kind of helps to suppress the XG a little bit, but also, as I say, they play you know two holding midfielders in front of their back four, which is kind of belts and braces, I would argue, at this level. But I would say that on the plus side, Celtic's XG differential is trending upwards. Our XG against is trending downwards. James has pointed out that whereas last season goalkeepers performed horribly against Celtic, they're now performing generally really well. Now that's something that can change game to game very, very dramatically. I mean, you know, I know Butland's had a lot of praise, but if you look at Butland, he's a bit like first season Joe Hart. He's kind of on zero OBV for goalkeepers, and like he's doing his job. And he's just doing his job. He's not like adding a lot of value. He's not costing them anything. Whereas Joe Hart is now a little bit below that. And that differential could swing the balance in a tight game maybe, or over a period. So I think Celtic, you know, if you look at the data, I think Celtic are trending in the right direction, are becoming more cohesive, do have more impactful players to come back. I mean, if you chuck Cifuentes and Jack into that team, would they really improve that much? Not really. Danilo, I think we'd probably raise it a little bit, especially compared to Dessers. So, but it's still probably certainly much closer than what it should be. I mean, it's just ridiculous given the financial. But you've also got to add in the fact that the rest of the league and you know, how good do you need to be to beat this Hearts team? How good do you need to beat this Aberdeen team? You don't need to be terribly good, unfortunately. And therefore, Even if there was a bigger quality gap between the two squads, the points gap wouldn't be very big because they're just simply not going to drop many points, in those other games. And so, you know, unfortunately, the risk from a spurious TAV pen, you know, becomes a real problem in a tight race like this.
Mm. So just before we finish up then, as we move closer and closer to this, I weirdly get more and more confident the closer we get to derby matches. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's just
until the game day. Yeah.
until the first 20 minutes, when we start giving the ball away at the edge of the box. But let's look at this from a positive perspective. So we're looking at, you'd argue that Rangers would be happy with a point away from home at Celtic Park, given the games in hand, the more defensive style of play that they play, the possession-based game that Celtic have, the fact that we're trending in the right direction. And I'll throw in Mr. Brendan Rodgers, who has only lost one game against Rangers. Now, I will say he did stat pack there for a little while in the early parts of his Celtic career, given how bad Rangers were. But he has an average points per game against Rangers of 2.5. So this is a guy that knows how to get a result in the derby. So, James, does that make you any more confident based on previous? I know you literally said on this podcast that based on previous, you don't like to judge things, but I'm judging it on that. I'm going to say that it's going to be a better performance than most people will probably be expecting from Celtic.
I think it informs. The past informs. It provides information. I just don't believe in kind of engineering predictions.
That's literally what I'm doing. But
right. So yeah. I think the likelihood. So I'm confident in the sense that we have a competent manager. That's offset. I think they also have one now, and you know, who's a better manager between Clement and Roger? Who knows? I have no clue. But I think it's within range of one another that on any given day, like they're going to do an intellectual battle and figure out the tactics. And again, to me, it's probably more around a coin flip on any single day in any single game. So that's kind of where I think about that dynamic. I think it probably does to our detriment because of the kind of the personnel, the way the squads line up and the style of play. I'd rather Rangers want to have a go, so to speak, a little bit. I think that would create more space, and where we are having better chance creation is that kind of getting in behind with Maeda and Kyogo, and I think that'll likely continue to be in this kind of game. So I'd actually be more worried if they are defensive and, you know, be bifurcated. I mean, I suspect they might do some high pressing because we have clear vulnerabilities in that regard, and they have the athletes and the coaching to make that at least a bit of a problem at times. And then if that, you know, when they that isn't successful from their perspective, that they drop back a little deeper and be more defensive, that would concern me because of, to Alan's point, you know, you stick Sterling and Lundstrom in front of a back four, and that's a lot of kind of size and defensive prowess that can, you know, create some issues for us, particularly with Butland. And the one addendum I'll add to what Alan said about Butland's profile is he's actually his shot stopping's been pretty good. It's the rest of his keeper play that has not been good. That's been offsetting that good shot stopping. So that's where I think if we make him move some, and again, that's the issue. If there is that space and we can get in behind, I mean, I think he is more like Hart, where he could pull, you know, a really dumb decision and coming off his line and, you know, get a card, for example, or clean out somebody because he's just not that dynamic coming off his line. Probably not to the degree Hart is at this stage, but so if we can move him a lot, but if it's basically, you know, a mini version of the weekend where they're organized and central and, you know, kind of letting our wings go at it from wide, and Butland's kind of nice and settled with the play in front of him, that to me, and then they can hit us on the counter because they do have the pace and the athleticism to go long and hit players in the seams, that's kind of the tactical matchup that would concern me. So again, back to, I'm confident because they do have injuries. And I think just general squad quality is kind of in coin flip territory. I think the managers is a coin flip, but it's a home game in this situation. I shouldn't be in a coin flip situation. I should be like brazenly confident. So that's kind of where my head's at.
Two final bits of positivity, Alan, before I bring you in for your predictions. The first is actually something reacting to what James said in terms of the tactics. The last couple of derbies, at least, the thing that I found extraordinarily weird is that they've seemed to play into Celtic's hands quite a bit and done the opposite of what you would have thought they would do to try exploit Celtic's weaknesses. And in that they just, they didn't seem to try to hit it long over Greg Taylor. They didn't seem to try isolate or fullbacks. They just couldn't get a grips with Celtic's midfield. They were giving the ball away easily in their own half. And we saw the resulting Kyogo goal that won the derby last time. So like that's one piece of positivity. The second piece is that, and I've been quite critical of Brendan Rodgers this season, mainly due to Celtic's league form. But in the Champions League, we got it pretty well. We were pretty well set up. And despite the league form being a bit stodgy, we seemed to always be able to pull the performance up the level needed for the Champions League, despite the results, obviously. But we were quite unlucky with some of the games. So if I would say if Celtic play as well as they played in the Champions League, then they will win this game.
Well, you'd like to think. I mean, I slightly disagree with James actually on this, in that I think it's very, my experience tells me, and this is again looking back, and it's less analytical in terms of stats based and more qualitative, is that if you come and you're kind of thinking, I'm going to be happy with a point here, it's actually a pretty dangerous mindset to be in a game. Because what do you do if you go a goal down? Do you throw your game plan out the window and suddenly open up, and then what happens? So, whilst I think they are probably they're better equipped to do that, to play that way than Celtic are, and we've seen this in Europe. They're far more effective in Europe than Celtic are, of going to difficult away grounds and bunkering in and being difficult to break down. You know, we've historically not been good at that in the last, 20 years probably, right? So I think they've got, and as James has said, they've got the players to do that. I just think it's a dangerous game to play in a big game like this. If, you know, because Celtic, it will be, you know, overwhelming amounts of possession, overwhelming amounts of control that Celtic will then have. And to your point, you know, we've talked about this, whereby the last thing we want is people closing down Greg Taylor, closing down Hart, closing down Scales, you know, putting a high press on. And they've not done that. And I think if they did try and do that, again, that could open the game up for Celtic. But it could introduce risk, as we've said, because we're not got good players under pressure like that. But I think the quality that we've got, especially in midfield, technical quality, and the technical quality of Celtic's forward players is superior. It's the defence I'd worry about, which again is why I think if they come thinking, right, we start with a point, we're happy if we end with a point, I just think then we've got Celtic's better players against probably their weaker players. So that and I think that would be an advantage to Celtic. And again, it's a difficult mindset, especially if you go a goal down, you've got to suddenly flip and what's your plan B, and can the players change their mentality? It's a really hard thing to do. I've seen this so many times over the years. So I think a point suits them, and I think it's in Clermont's nature to be quite sort of not defensive, but certainly conservative, let's say. So I hope they do set up like that. Actually, I'm the opposite of James. I hope they do set up looking to kind of, you know, grind out a draw, because I think if Celtic do get a goal, it'll be very difficult for them.
Let nobody ever complain about us being overly negative again, because that was an extremely positive couple of minutes here on the Huddle Breakdown as we head towards the second derby of the season this Saturday at 12:30. Hopefully it ends up with another Celtic victory, because otherwise it will be really squeaky bum time now until the end of the season. Usually you can't lose more than three games in the league and still go on to win it. That's what the history of the past has shown. And Celtic are currently on 2 losses. So hopefully this weekend is not going to be a third notch on the belt. That's where we'll park the show for this weekend. We will be back again next week with a review of the podcast. If you're new to the show, do be sure to hit the subscribe button if you're watching on YouTube, or you can get the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts as well. Alan, thank you very much. Enjoy the show. Or enjoy the game, rather.
Yes, thank you, Andrew.
Enjoy the show as well. James, thank you.
Thank you.
And we shall chat to you next week. Until then, good luck.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.